Hi, everyone. Welcome to the 18 Summer Show. We are your hosts, Jim
and Jamie Shields. We're here to help you bring family back.
In the last decade, we've helped thousands of families create the family life that you have always wanted.
We give you simple solutions on how you can ignite your family life and succeed in both business and at home.
And please remember, time is of the essence. You only have 18 summers to truly connect with your children.
So let us help you make the most of it.
All right, 18 Summers Tribe, I am super excited to be here today for our Candid Conversations podcast because today's guest is very special for me, for Jamie, whole 18 Summers community. And I'm going to explain that because you guys already know him without knowing him yet, and you're going to realize why in a minute. This podcast, as you know, is focused on family life and it's focused on your life. So we want to always be connected to the subject of how to be a better communicator. And that's one of the reasons why I'm pleased to introduce speaking skills coach that's helped me with my professional speaking career. His name's Joel Weldon. He's a Hall of Famer professional speaker who's been paid to speak at over 3,000 events in 47 years. So Joel has been around the game for quite a while. He's a highly sought after coach that I've personally used and the creator of the Ultimate Speaking System, which I don't even know if I've ever spoken about, but if you guys have come to our talks and workshops, Joel has influenced you because Joel helped teach me. And it was actually a conversation one day in my coaching that brought up the concept 18 Summers and why Jamie and I rebranded the entire company years ago to this magical, simple math equation that Joel taught me. So I'm excited for him to share it to you. Again, he's coached and critiqued over 10,000 speakers. And what I've accomplished most is Joel has gone through the long term and doing what he loves. And that's going to be a big conversation today. You know, when I joke with Joel about his age, he says his social security number is 5. That's it. He was so early in the game, he's 5. And he keeps me laughing. His energy is phenomenal. He's been a great personal coach and business coach for me. And he's going to show us today some real big things about doing what you love for the long term, the inception of 18 Summers, and how to be a better communicator and stand out in today's world. So, Joel, please, you know, say hello to our tribe and welcome.
Well, Jamie and Jim, thank you so much for having me and for the introduction. And welcome. You made a great decision to invest your time, effort, and energy to be on this podcast. So whatever you've got, let's get going.
Excellent. Well, Joel, you know I turn to you very openly, and I know you say, I heard you were saying something nice about me, because I do try to talk nice to you about you because of all the influence you've had. But one of the things that has always stood out about you is doing what you love. We hear so many people talk about doing what they love, but frankly, sometimes those people are just getting started in their career. You have now gone for 50 years, and I've watched you for the last 20 about be able to talk about speaking, teaching people how to speak, and then still water skiing into your 80s. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, let's correct it a little bit. I'm not into my 80s. I'm a few months away.
Oh, I thought we had hit the big date. My bad. Well,
not yet. No, no. And then that's where I got to ski my age on our slalom course. 80 passes every birthday since I'm 70. But we'll talk about that later. So as you listen to this, if somebody was to ask you, do you love what you do? What would you say? And I think, Jim, the way you structured that question from your experience, and Jamie's too, most people really don't love what they do.
Yeah.
They might like what they do. They might put up with what they do. But would they rather do that than anything else? And I remember a long time ago, even I think before we had writing, it was, we had stone tablets. and somebody once said, work is what you're doing when you'd rather be doing something else. Mm-hmm. And based on that definition, I don't think you should ever work. Because if what you're doing is what you love, it's never work. Now, Jamie and Jim, since you're the only ones I can ask this question to, is that true for you? Do you feel that you are working or are you doing what you want to do?
Yeah. You know, Joel, it's funny you asked that. We were talking about doing more of what we love. And this right here, where it was just an experiment, really, at first, to say, well, why don't we start interviewing people together around family life, around things? We have such a good time doing interviews like this right here, right? What we're doing now is just so much fun. It's not like, oh, I have to go to an insurance seminar or something, we get so excited to do interviews like this because we're sharing and we're sitting here learning the whole time. So this right here, absolutely, we love what we're doing.
And we don't even have to put on pants.
Right, with the Zoom world that we're in. Well, as your listeners, as part of this 18 Summers family that you've created, as you're listening to Jim and Jamie and I talk, I don't have the answer for you to find what you love, but I would challenge you that you should. And no matter what it is you're doing now, if it's not what you love and you've got to make a career change, and I think with COVID-19, so many people have pivoted, changed, everything has become a new normal now with no in-face meetings. One of my biggest group of clients are financial advisors, which have had to shut down their office. Everybody's working remotely. And just in the month of January, three of these advisors, Jamie and Jim, have told me they've closed their office. Their productivity has increased. The clients love the virtual communications, and there's no reason for them to incur these massive rents when they can work virtually.
Yeah.
And if they needed a face-to-face meeting, they've gone to the client's home, which the clients love. So you can always find something good in the bad.
Yes.
But let's just set this premise that you found something that you love, like you and Jamie have done. And if you love what you're doing, it's not work. But one of the things that I've added to this twist is loving everything. So as an example, as a professional speaker, I have many friends, many of them Hall of Famers with me, who say this, Joel, I just love being up in front of an audience. Boy, when I'm on stage, I can't tell you how wonderful it is. Oh, but I just hate the travel. And oh, staying in a hotel just kills me. But once I get on stage, I love it. Well, I didn't accept that philosophy. So one of the things that I did early in the career that might help you is love everything.
Yeah.
So as an example, if we were to break down the system of giving a presentation at a live event, which is not happening now, first there's the contact with the client. Then there's the preparation, finding out about the client's needs, who the audience is, doing a lot of research, studying the company, studying the organization, talking to at least 5 to 10 people that are going to be at that meeting to find out their perspective on things. Then creating the content. Then putting that content into visuals, creating printed materials, and creating a follow-up program. And then with all of that happening, which could take 30 or 40 hours of preparation time,
yep.
Then comes travel day. And of course, if the meeting is in Florida, where you are living in Arizona, I take the first flight out, which means I don't get in to Miami or Fort Lauderdale or wherever it might be, or Jacksonville, till mid-afternoon. Then it's going to their evening program. Then it's checking out the room after the evening program, moving chairs around, setting up the stage, making sure everything is right. Then it's going on stage the next day, doing the presentation, meeting the people afterwards, staying to the end of the event, packing up everything and going home. All of that, the decision was made decades ago that I would love all of that because I couldn't do the part on the stage in front of an audience without all of those steps happening. So in my mind, they are all equal.
Isn't that cool?
Preparing is a 10. Getting on an airplane is a 10. Going to a hotel is a 10. Setting up the room, moving chairs, rearranging the stage. All of that is so exciting, thrilling, and wonderful because without all of those steps, the presentation could never happen.
True, true.
So that's been the mindset of all of the activities that have been part of my life is to love all of them, which means you're happy all the time. You're not doing so, oh, this is the worst part of my job, but I got to get through this before I can get to that. What if you change that mindset? Say that thing that you don't like now. Without that, the joy couldn't happen.
Yeah.
So as an example, and I have no personal experience speaking about this, but Jamie does. You have had 4 children.
I love having children.
Okay.
She's good at it too.
But giving birth
I love
not
it.
A pleasant experience. But the end result is you've got 4 wonderful children.
Right.
So when you have been through it the first and second time, by the time you got to number three and four, you could have said to yourself in the stages of labor and the discontent and the pressure and the pain, I know what's coming at the end of this. I'm going to have a wonderful boy or girl that's going to be like my two others. And now we're going to have three. And then we had four. And now I think you said you wish you had even more. So, but that's the same thing, that your mind has gone beyond the discomfort and the unpleasantries of being pregnant and giving birth and focusing on the end result. So that's what I would challenge you to do as you listen to this.
That's powerful.
Instead of labeling part of your work, oh, I hate this part, but I got to do it, is love that part.
It's funny you said that, Joel, because our daughter was born. It was a 41-hour labor. And right upon labor and the baby being picked up and brought over, literally 41 hours of labor just ended, and Jamie looked at me and said, "Sweetheart, we could do that again." I said, "Holy!" And the nurses started laughing. It was really quite a moment. So
the doctor said he didn't want to see me for at least 10 months.
So that's the example.
And on the same accord, we did an interview the other day, which was really sweet. He was an older father, and he commented, "You know, so many people said, don't you dare do you change the diaper. His mentor said, you fight to change every diaper because those diapers don't last very long. And he said, it's true. He and his spouse, every time there was a diaper to change, they fought over who got to change it instead of who had to. Well, I love that, bringing the passion and the joy in, falling in love with every part of it.
You taught me that on the personal side too. I remember when we were standing there in Arizona together and I said, Joel, you know, you're 70 years old. You're in incredible shape. I mean, you look at Joel, I've been in the presence of him, and he was young beyond his years, in very fit, active shape. And we were talking about the water skiing, and I don't know if you remember what you said to me, but you said, Jim, I just want to let you know, I'm very humbled and honored you say this, but I just want to remind you, this doesn't come easy. I work out every day. I eat healthy. You told me, like, hey, I don't just show up and water ski. I've designed myself, as you're talking about, to do all these parts, love every bit of them. But you were always committed so that you could be doing these things, you know, for such a great long period. Do you remember talking to me about that?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I think I told you when just before we started the interview, I just finished my training session, and my personal trainer, and I've had him for 20 years, over 20 years now. And he's been coming to the house since COVID-19. We've not gone to the gym. And I just said to him, I said, you know, we got 2 months for ski season. So I built in a slalom starting board in our home with a ski rope handle. And I practice my starts. And then I get in a holding position and hold it for 2 minutes. And all of this is designed for March, which is when I start. Usually stop end of October or the beginning of November. I need 150 degrees, Jim. I'm not tough like you. So I need 150 combination water and air. So if I get 75 and 75, I got 150, I'm in.
You're good.
But right now, the water temperature at our ski lake is about 52, and the outside area is maybe another 50. So we're at 102 degrees. I got another 48 degrees to go. But that's a plan. When you do those, if you were in my position and had to do what I just finished doing in the workout, you would say it's not really pleasant, but to me it's pleasant because if I don't do this, I can't get to do that.
Yes.
And that's why people in their 80s are not slalom skiing anymore, because they can't get up or they're not strong enough to hold that rope. So if you look at everything that you do that maybe isn't joyful, thrilling, and wonderful, as the means to the end that you're joyful of. And having worked out at a gym, a trainer's gym, where they were hardcore training clients, I can't tell you how many people said, I just hate coming here. I just hate working out. But they're there all the time because they like the results. And I try to stop them if I get friendly with them. I say, what if you just stop saying that? What if you just said, I really love working out because then I can feel so fit and strong the rest of the week. And it's just that mindset that makes such a difference. The work is the same, the feeling is the same, but the result is completely different when you walk into that gym with an enthusiastic, joyful, optimistic, I can't wait to get started attitude, because after this hour workout of blood, sweat, and tears, I'm going to be fit enough that I can do and whatever it is you want to do.
So I love it.
That's a different way of thinking. And I hope as you listen to this, you love something so much that you keep doing it. And then you'll never retire. I mean, I can't even think of retiring.
And exactly, and that's giving you the extra leg, the extra mile. And since you don't see everything as a burden, it comes across in your performance. I've watched it. But bringing it back to younger people, I think there is still, even with us saying this, even with you talking about this, still water skiing, still speaking in front of huge crowds, can a young person today do what they love? There's still an argument to this. What's your opinion on that?
Oh, absolutely. Well, most of the people I hang around with are much younger than me. I tell some of these people, you know, I got socks older than you. And two of those people are my daughters, and they're both part of our business now. And this has been a great blessing of all the changes that have occurred in the world around us. But when it comes to young people, absolutely, even more so, because one of my granddaughters, and I have four grandkids, two of them are out of college. One is at Annapolis in his third year, and the other one is in high school. But the two that are out of school, my granddaughter, Kaylee, she moved to Montana. Zula, Montana.
I've been there.
Great little town. We love it.
Well, they both work remotely. They work for companies. They get well paid. And they live where they love to live, in the outdoors, because they're both outdoor people. And as a result, they have created a life that they love. And I think it can happen now more than ever. Because Jamie, Jim, and you and me, when we started out, you had to go to an office. You had to be part of a company. There was none of this entrepreneurship. And then entrepreneurship turned into remote entrepreneurship. With the benefit of Zoom or Skype or these other wonderful platforms, you didn't have to be in San Francisco, New York, or Dallas, or Chicago to be part of an organization or to make a living. So in answer to your question, I think young people today have an even greater opportunity to fall in love with what they're doing and be joyful and happy all the time in doing that.
Well, and especially if they're in Montana. I mean, we love Montana. We're outdoors people. We do RV adventures. And Montana is one of our top of choices all over the world.
Glacier National.
So Glacier, and been through Missoula. And so to hear that if they can be placed there, that's so relative to today and to a lot of our audience whose kids are starting to make that transition into adulthood. And there's this doubt. And we're going, don't doubt that. Right. Don't doubt that. All the things you're saying, Joel, if you embrace every part of it, then like our son wants to be a professional charter fisherman. He's already training with a group in the Florida Keys. He's already had some big adventures and big experiences. And he has two mentors ahead of him in their early 20s who are making piles of money. And they always say, well, if we weren't fishing today, which is considered work today, we take the day off and go fishing. Yeah. So it's...
Well, that's it. That's loving what you do. Absolutely. Yeah.
So we follow the same as you. I mean, we see a line on a lot of things, which is what brought us together originally. But I do want to switch gears kind of to the inception of 18 Summers. I mean, I have never, ever, ever, ever been shy to say, my speaking coach, Joel Weldon, told me this, because when people say the name of your company, it's so powerful. How did that come about? And it was us. It was our conversation. You were teaching me on my first family talks, and you said, wow, this is important. And you were my biggest cheerleader, my biggest critic, too, in positive ways of saying, you got to improve this. You got to improve this. But you are the man who brought me 18 summers. I mean, can you tell just from your words what the 18 summers equation means, how you were exposed and brought it to me?
Well, I don't remember exactly how I came up with it, but having two daughters 6 years apart that were so important in our life, I think Judy and we've been married 57 years this year. She was 15 and I was 17 when we met in Sunday school, and we have been together pretty much ever since, even though we dated 4 years. But we really wanted to have the kind of family that was a real family. And it was sort of a revelation that we had a limited time to do that. that once they got to 18, which was the college age that most people went to, and I didn't go to college. I went to tech school and learned to be a carpenter for a couple of years. And Judy had 1 year of college at Douglas in New Jersey. So we don't really have college education, but we knew our kids would. And then they would be gone. And that you had to really establish that early on. And that meant doing the things that were based on them. And I don't know if it's been 100% for me, but we certainly didn't schedule speaking engagements on their birthdays or graduations. Never miss a birthday, never miss a graduation. Go to school programs. I can't tell you how many of the Kiva Elementary School parent conferences I went to, sitting there listening to the teachers talk about our girls, but it was being there and going to their sporting events and being part of their life, and then being boaters. And of course, you know, being board people and surfers, that a boat is a unique thing.
Yeah.
That
oh, yes.
When you're on a boat, you can't go anywhere else. So because we had a boat, they could bring their friends. And they were together with their parents and their friends. And that was a big thing. And now, when I look at my daughters in their 40s and 50s, and see the relationship that we have, it's probably closer than it has ever been. Mm-hmm. And yet I have so many friends that have, yeah, my kids are back east and I, you know, we see them at Christmas, but this year we couldn't go. So we, you know, we talk on the phone and, you know, we're really just not that close anymore. Well, I'm just so grateful. That's been the biggest blessing, I think, now is getting up in years. I'm not getting older, but I'm getting up in years, that my daughters are just so much a part of our life. And it's not like, oh, I got to go to Pops again. And I think that you can have that as you're listening, if you follow what Jamie and Jim have given you with these 18 summers. Because think of this, if you are a young person now with young kids, your life expectancy is well up in the 90s to 100. Now, I just read an article, Jim, that a child born today has a 50% chance of living to 100 or more.
Wow.
Think about that. That doesn't mean retiring at 65 and having 35 years of being out of service.
Yeah.
Because I mentioned that my grandson, Barrett, is at Annapolis. And when we talked about the word retirement, he said, Pops, is that, that's my name for my kids, Pops. Pops, do you know what the Navy calls the ship that's been retired? I said, no, Barry, I have no idea. He said it means out of service.
Mm.
Wow. So is that what you're looking for? Whatever your career is now, as you're listening to this podcast, I can't wait till I'm out of service. No.
It's a good
now, that doesn't mean you have to be working for money. If you've done well financially and you've earned the kind of money where you won't be a burden to your children, then you could be of service in a lot of other ways.
Yeah.
But to retire and think I'm going to play golf every day is going to be good for a year or so. And then they drop dead.
Yeah,
because they have nothing else to look forward to.
No, for sure.
So I think that that perspective is so important as a young person listening to this, that you are going to work a long time. And why would you stop at 65, 70 or 75 unless physically you're in a position where you can't? So one of our son-in-laws, Johnny, is a he's now just promoted to assistant fire chief in Mesa, Arizona, and he has to retire. There is an age where you cannot be a firefighter anymore. And that's understandable. But unless you're in a position like that, where there is a limitation, pilots working for a major airline have to retire at 65, which yeah. they're trying to change because, man, when you're 65, you just about put it all together. You're at the top of your career when you're at 65 and then throwing them out the door. And now, that's something you can't control. But if you are an entrepreneur, if you have your own business, fall in love with it and forget about retiring.
Well, what I've learned too with that retirement thing, now with us working where we don't even look at the retirement, when you force this retirement, like saying, I want to be done at 50, well, you start to put a lot of pressure on to make hay when the sun shines and force things and really overgrind. And that's where I think a lot of the 18 summers can be lost, where you can say, hey, You don't need to retire. You can continue to work, but the years are not all created equal. I mean, that's one thing you taught me where I've said to Jamie, I will not miss out on adventures for these first 18 summers. I just won't. Business suffers, it suffers, but I think it hasn't suffered because I've been so rejuvenated on that side where we've had probably what people would consider an obscene amount of time with our children and these adventures. But that came back to you saying, do you do those first 18 summers right, Jim? They're going to want to come back. And that's been not tested by us yet, but I've seen it work true in your life.
Yes, it is. And, you know, I told you I had a closing comment. And the closing comment, I'm going to read a letter to you.
Okay.
Please do.
And that's going to be proof that 18 summers works. So I won't tell you any more about that.
But we're going to listen to that in a minute, but I think that's going to tie in with a main thing. I want to talk about doing what we love, the Inception 18 Summers, but also communicating and speaking in today's world to stand out. I don't care what they do, Joel. They're for the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker. If they learn to communicate and speak, and that's something I remember in our first session you and I did together, you are going to have more success. You know, because I do the real estate side too. He said, Jim, if you can talk about the deal better than the other guy, you're going to get more deals. And I've used that. And so I'm always, when we're teaching families, we're always saying, make sure you get your kids the important lessons not taught in school. And so I wanted you to kind of share some of your top level wisdom on communicating and speaking in today's world to stand out so you can live in Montana, so you can go towards things you love. Can you talk a little to that?
Well, yes, because this whole system that I've created was systematizing everything about the speaking process. It's a communication process. Whether you're writing an email, that's a presentation. Whether you're writing a book, that's a presentation too. Whether you're talking to one person, three people, or 300 people, it's a presentation, whether you're live or virtual. So here are the three basic premises of everything it's taken me 47 years to learn about being an effective communicator and speaker. Number one, it's a learned skill. We are not born knowing how to speak. And I think, Jamie, you could verify this. When your four kids got about two or so, were they now speaking?
Oh, yes. They were speaking. But, you know, they were not quite communicating thoroughly, if that makes sense.
By three, were they communicating where you could understand them?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they all spoke very early, absolutely. You know, they could communicate, I want this or I don't want that. But as far as a feeling or an idea, that took a little longer.
Right. And they learned how to do that with mom and dad's help and brothers and sisters' help. They learned to. And that's what we can do as adults, that being an effective communicator and speaker is a learned skill. And the more you do it, the better you get if you're doing it the right way. That's the key. Number two is be yourself. That being an effective speaker or communicator is not a performance act. When you're on stage, it's not being something else. And that's what I noticed right away about Jim when I started watching your videos and giving you feedback, is you were always the same, whether you were talking to me or talking to an audience, or whether you were with Jamie or with your kids. And that's what you want to be, congruent. What you see is what you get. Being an effective speaker is not moving your body and changing your voice. And that's ridiculous. If somebody saw you do that and then they met you, they'd say, who are you? Different than the guy in the video.
That's so true.
Be yourself. And the third thing is, it's all about your audience. It's not just about you. So even though this interview is a personal interview with Joel Weldon, if you go back and re-listen to this, count how many times I've said you. What about your career? What about you? Are you in love with what you're doing? And that's what you need to think of. Look at your last email. No matter what your career is right now, look at the last email you wrote to a client or an associate and count how many times you said I and how many times you said you.
Wow.
And you'll know right away if it's about you or about them. And that's one of the keys to being an effective communicator, making it about them.
I've never in 10 years, and that was 10 years ago when we probably had our first coaching session. You can ask Jamie, I still prepare my family talks today, Joel. And I say this, So what? Who cares? That was you teaching me that. This is about the audience. So what? Who cares? How's this going to help the audience? And you would pull those ideas. So I have this little Joel on my shoulder to keep me on track.
I use it in coaching him.
Yes.
So what?
Who cares if I'm, you know, going off to grandma's house or not bringing the point home? That was your coaching of saying, so what? Who cares? This is about your audience. Know your audience. This is for your audience. And I still work with that every day.
Well, that's why one of my little slogans is, your introduction is never your bio. Your opening isn't, I am so happy to be here. And your closing isn't, thank you for listening to me.
Yeah.
Because that's all about you. And the opening needs to be about your audience.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that you are here. And you're going to get so much out of this podcast.
And Joel, I'll say too, I know that these skills that you've honed in on, these three steps, have to do with speaking to an audience, speaking to your clients. But man, how effective for speaking to your children, how effective for speaking to your spouse. Because thinking, you know, there are times in which, you know, we talk a lot about giving a sincere apology or a genuine compliment. Those apologies sometimes are a learned skill. You know, you really have to, it's practiced, you put in the time, you know, and then you get a little more comfortable eating your own foot. And so I think that that's just so true. And then being yourself, if I'm inauthentic in my gratitude or inauthentic in my apology, it's obvious, you know, they smell that out. Your children will know, like, you're full of it. Don't try to show up and be somebody that you're not. Don't pretend to be my friend when you sell me out every other day. Like, I think that that's so important with your children and your spouse, being yourself. And then, you know, the third one, it's not all about you. Know your audience. And I think that so often when we communicate with our children, whether it's these big concepts of the outside world or even our own feelings about something, just know who you're speaking to. Know your audience. One, is it appropriate? Two, so what? Who cares, right? Those are huge, very, very powerful. Thank you. Yeah. I know our listeners will get a lot out of that.
Yeah. So for all our listeners, I want to repeat that back real quick. So everyone comes to us about, oh, how do we get our kids to be better communicators and speakers? As Joel said, it's a learned skill. Be yourself when you're doing it, because that canned stuff just doesn't work. And Joel is proof of that, because I've seen his authenticity. And three, it's all about your audience. So if you can just start with those things, that is a solid ground to plant on. And so I think that gives them a real good taste, Joel, of some things to work on that will start to embed. And that's what I love about your principles, is they kind of seep in and take hold, because the stuff that you taught me 10 years ago is continuing to take hold. And that's the stuff that's the most worthwhile education. When it does take hold, when it does stay long-term, I applaud you on that. I'm looking forward to the letter now. I'm going back to the letter. First of all, I want to make sure you tell people how can they get in touch, because I personally use it. I want people to know for themselves and their family, but I want to talk about that letter too.
Okay. Well, first of all, if you want to just check out what we have, it's ultimatespeaker.com. Just go to ultimatespeaker.com. And if you're interested in anything, now, I don't know how familiar you are when you listen to podcasts, that many times there's what's called an affiliate program, where somebody has a product, a book or a service. And if you end up buying it, if you're a member of that group, the host gets a percentage of that. Well, Jamie and Jim didn't want any of that. So here's what we've come up with. We have a discount code, 18 Summers. So if you like anything you see on that website, if you just type in 18 Summers, you get it at half price. That's it.
Oh, nice. Great. Thank you.
That's an 18 Summers bonus. And then if you're interested in talking to me about working with you or one of our coaches helping you, then just let Jim or Jamie know, and then they can pass on your email and I'll get in touch with you. All right, so that's if you want more. All right, so let me just ask you this question. I think if you're listening to this podcast, you have children. And what would give you the greatest joy to say to yourself, you know, maybe I've been a good parent? Well, it's results. How successful are your children? What are they doing? Are you proud of them? Well, I mentioned that both my daughters work in our business, and my youngest daughter, Jenny, is one of our speech coaches. She's also a professional speaker. She's a humorist, a stand-up comic. She teaches our members how to add humor to their presentations, and she's been traveling with me. And last September, we were in Dallas, and then I got this thank you note. Now, I want you to imagine that this is you receiving it, not me. And then the question is, how would you feel as a parent of your child who said this. Pops, thanks so much for inviting me to Dallas to be with you. You really are the best speaker in the world and the most prepared speaker. You certainly taught them all so much in such a short time. I learned so much by just watching you talk and how to present your ideas with conviction. Wow, I want to be like that someday. It's so obvious that you love what you're doing and you love to help people. What a great example of love you are. I feel so thankful to be able to learn from you and to be able to share these ideas with others. I wrote this post on Facebook. The way that you treat people and show love and the appreciation is something I will always remember. Thank you for being such a great role model for me. And thank you for inviting me and trusting me to help you. I love you very much, Angie. And that's her nickname for me.
That's her nickname. It's beautiful.
If you got that letter, how would you feel? Mm. And that's what the result is of 18 summers with your kids.
Love it. Joel, you've made a huge impact on our life. We love you. 18 summers, the name, the simple math equation so many people do now, and the philosophy we've built around it would not have the forward momentum or presence without you. So I do want to say thank you. I know that you always say, I heard you said something nice about me today because it got back, but we will continue to. Mm-hmm. We'll continue to learn from you. I do want to ask you a spinoff question, which I had talked about to you the other week. As you know, our tradition is we always ask people, what would your 75-year-old self tell you? What's the advice? But as you said, that's too young. I want to reverse and go even younger. And you and I were talking the other day about, well, you had some clear back in time things to say to 18-year-old Joel. Do you want to share that? We usually do the 75-year-old self, but I know you said, Jim, let me go in the other direction. And I was fascinated by it. So if you want to do that.
Well, just think about that. You're probably older than 18. So you've had some life experience. If you could go back in time and talk to yourself, and you were 18 years of age, what would you tell yourself? Well, now that I'm approaching 80, I know exactly what I would tell my 18-year-old self. And hopefully it's the same thing you would be thinking, that your life has a plan and a purpose. If you accept that premise, that you're here for a reason, that you're not just a lucky sperm that created you, that there's a purpose and a plan in your life. And I know that. I made a list of everything I could remember about my life, all the events, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And it was amazing how I realized in looking at every one of those, especially the bad and the ugly, how they were all blessings, mm-hmm. that they all prepared me to become who I am today. Being raised by a single mom because my dad walked out on us when I was born and I never saw him. The fact that we were poor. The fact that we wanted to buy a home when I found Judy and we got married, and we lived in a tiny apartment and we wanted to buy our first home and her parents wouldn't loan us part of the money for the down payment. And we had found this home that we just fell in love with. It was just perfect for us, but we couldn't buy it because we didn't have enough money. But a year and a half later, we had saved enough money, found another house, and it was so much better than that first house that we'd bought. And we would go back and look at that house and park our car in front and laugh and say, can you imagine we wanted to live here? But had her dad said yes, we might have lived in that house and missed mm-hmm. that wonderful opportunity. And all of those things were blessings. So if you look at your life and think back to the things that you might think were not good, I bet you can find that either they made you stronger or they opened a door that didn't exist beforehand. And as I looked at that list of events, beginning my career as a carpenter, I mean, till I was 26 years old, I was banging nails and digging ditches. At that age, I was making $62 a week and I was married, going nowhere fast. Mm. If I hadn't had that construction experience, I wouldn't know how to build a presentation. It taught me how important preparation is and important going step by step and having a plan. All of that was preparing me to be a speaker. The fact that I couldn't speak in school and never gave an oral report in high school, couldn't even lead my Sunday school class in silent prayer. I mean, imagine if that was you. You were so shy, you couldn't lead your class in silent prayer, and you become a speaker? How could that be? If I hadn't had that experience, I would not have the patience or the understanding to work with people who come to me and are nervous when they speak or uncomfortable. I mean, if I was valedictorian of my high school class, the head of the debate team, oh, what do you mean? You can't speak? Come on, well, don't be a baby. Just get up there and speak. I would have no clue to understand that. And then giving my first talk at age 28 and told by a person in the room I was the worst speaker they had ever heard, forced me to join Toastmasters. Yeah. And by joining Toastmasters, I learned to speak. And I'm still a member 50 years later because it's a learned skill and you got to keep learning and honing and getting better and better at it all the time. So if you were to make a list of everything in your life, the good, the bad, and the ugly, I'm willing to bet you that if you look back on those experiences, they were part of a plan. Now, if you're not sure of that plan, it's like connect the dots puzzle. Jim, do you ever remember those connect the dot puzzles?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh, we still do them with our toddlers. Oh,
you do? Okay, all right. So maybe there's, what, 200 or 300 numbers, and you look at it, and it just looks like numbers and dots. It looks like nothing. But then as you start to connect them, suddenly an elephant appears or a dog or a flower, and you start to see the picture. Well, that's what's happened at 79. As I look back at the dots, I can see the plan. When I was 18, all I could see were dots and numbers, rejections, failure, inability to communicate, not realizing that maybe at 36, I would see it different, at 46, at 56, at 66, and so on. And the same thing in your life. And you both are young people. I mean, I have shoes older than both. So think about that. If you aren't seeing this clear picture, this blessing in your life, this purpose that you haven't finished connecting all the dots. Just keep going.
Absolutely. Love it.
And that's what I tell the 18-year-old self.
Love it, Joel. Love it. Well, that is something we can all learn from. I continue to learn from, and trusting that more dots are connecting and that there's a plan to all of this and it's all part of that plan, that's something I can really chew on for quite a while.
You've been wonderful with the plan so far, and 18 Summers has helped so many parents have even better relationships with their kids. So congratulations for what you've done.
Well, thank you. And you are a big part of that, and you'll continue to be. I know how in demand you are, and I do want to say thank you to our whole tribe for telling some of your story today, for imparting some of your top level wisdom that's helped so many. And you mean a lot to Jamie and I, and we'll always appreciate all of your efforts that you give us.
Well, it's a joy and a privilege, and make it a wonderful day.
Thanks for being here today, Joel. Take care.